Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company on Live on Era, the Irish programme here on Talk Radio Europe. Happy New Year, firstly. Hard to believe that we're in 2019 already. It's going to be a busy programme today, and the reason for that is that I have one extended interview which I recorded last week when I was back in Ireland. That is with the show business and comic legend that is Brendan Grace. Mari Cahalan will be joining me as well. Mari is the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition, which is starting at the RDS in Dublin this coming Wednesday, and that is an institution in Ireland. We'll have some famous Irish birthdays, we'll try and squeeze in a history lesson, there'll be some great Irish music in there, and as always, can I remind you, if you would like to get in touch with the programme, we would love to hear from you. The email address is ger@tre.radio. Will we start with the birthdays? I think we should. The first birthday of consequence that we meet is Wednesday, the 9th of January. Brian Friel, playwright, was born in County Tyrone in 1929 on that day. Ray Houghton, the football player, Irish soccer player, born in 1962. So we say happy 57th birthday to him on Wednesday. On Thursday, the 10th of January, Brian Cowan, former Taoiseach of Ireland, was born in Clara in County Offaly in 1960. Happy 59th birthday to Brian Cowan. Jason Sherlock, the GAA player, author, and indeed starting to become a bit of a pundit as well, was born in Dublin in 1976. Friday, the 11th of January, is a hurling day by all accounts. Two great hurlers from Ireland. Firstly, Henry Shefflin was born in Ballyhale in County Kilkenny in 1979. Happy 40th birthday. And trotting just 2 years behind him from the Banner County, Tony Griffin, born in Ballygay just outside Ennis in 1981. Happy 38th birthday to Tony Griffin. Saturday, the 12th of January, Matt Malloy. Ah, oh, Matt, wonderful musician. He's been part of Planxty, the Bothy Band, the Chieftains. He was born in 1947. 62 years old on Saturday, and if you ever go to Westport, go into Matt Malloy's pub. There's a fine pint there, number one, but there's always good music there as well. Steve Travers is a man who was part of the Miami Show Band, the only member of the show band to survive the Miami Show Band massacre back in the 1970s. Well, he celebrates his birthday next Saturday. He's going to be 68 years old, born in 1951. And finally, on Sunday, the 13th of January, the Ulster golfer Ronan Rafferty will be celebrating his 55th birthday. Famous birthdays for you on this coming week. And we wish them all a very happy birthday. The first song we're going to take is from a man you've heard before on the programme, Christy Moore. But it's a song that was kind of inspired because Ray Houghton put the ball in the back of the net. Here's Christy and Joxer.
Thank you very much.
It was in the year of 88 in the lovely month of June, when the gadflies were swarming and dogs howling at the moon.
On heat, on the front here.
How it rose, three pigeon sandwiches for Stuttgart we began. Joxer packed his German phrase book and jump leads for the van. Oh, well, some of the lads had never been away from home before. It was the first time Whacker put his foot outside of Inchicore. And before we left for Europe, we knew we'd need a plan. So we all agreed that Joxer was the man to drive the van. In Germany, the Autobahn was like the long mile road. There was every make a car and van, all carrying the full load. Four transits and hiaces and an old Bedford from Tralee, with the engine overheating from long haul and duty free. Well, there was fans from Ballyfermot, Ballybuck and Ballymun, on the journey of a lifetime, and a crack was 91. Well, Joxer met a German's daughter on the banks of the River Rhine, and he told her she'd be welcome in Ballyfermot any time. A big falcher wrote Fräulein. And as soon as we found Stuttgart, we got the wagons in a ring. Sean Oak got out the banjo and Peter played the mandolin. Oh, there was fans there from everywhere, attracted by the sounds. And the first flag y'all in Europe, and Joxer passed the flag and round. But the session, it ended when we'd finished all the stout. The air mattresses inflated, and the sleeping bags rolled out. As one by one we fell asleep, Gioxer had a dream. He dreamt himself and Jack Charlton sat down to pick the tea. Gioxer dreamt they both agreed and Packy Bonner straight away, and that Moran, Whelan and McGraw were certain they'd play. But tempers they began to rise, patience wearing thin. Jack wanted Cascarino, but Gioxer wanted Quinn. And the dream turned into a nightmare. Gioxer stuck the head in Jack, who wanted to bring Johnny Giles and Eamon Dunphy back. Oh, well, the cock crew in the morning, it crew but loud and shrill, and Gioxer woke up in his sleeping bag many miles from Arbor Hill. And next morning, none of the experts gave us the slightest chance. They said that the English team would lead us on a merry dance. Oh, with their Union Jacks, all them English fans, for victory they were set, until Ray Houghton got the ball and he stuck it in the net. Hey! What happened next is history, brought tears to many eyes. Oh, that day will be the highlight of many people's lives. Well, Gioxer climbed right over the top, and the last time he was seen was arm in arm with Jack Charlton, singing revenge for Skibbereen. And a whacker's back in Inchicore, he's living with his mam, and Jack Charlton has been proclaimed an honorary Irishman. Hey, listen, do you remember the German's daughter on the banks of the River Rhine? Lord, yes, didn't she show up in Ballyfermot last week?
Thank you very much, everybody.
Wonderful song from Christy Moore. And Ray Houghton put the ball on the back of the net, ending up with Gioxer having to go to Stuttgart. Listen, we've got a busy programme lined up. Let's do a very quick commercial break. Come back to me just after that. I will be talking to Mari Cahalan.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
I was thinking the other day, and it seemed like forever that I remember in January the Young Scientist Exhibition, as it was known then. It's now known as the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition, has been underway in January. And when I looked at it, I was right, because it's running longer than I'm running. It started back in 1965, and I thought it would be an ideal opportunity to talk to somebody about it, because it kicks off on Wednesday, the 9th of January. I am joined on the line by Mari Cahalan. She is the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. And Mari, thank you for joining me.
No problem at all.
Happy New Year, firstly.
Happy New Year to yourself as well.
Now, I remarked to you just when we made the initial connection on the phone that you must get no Christmas holidays, because the Young Scientists and Technology Exhibition has always been in January. So it must be a hectic time for you.
It is. But we get a lot of the work out of the way before Christmas, and the fact that everybody else is off for the Christmas and New Year break makes it catching up on things quite easy, actually. So we're back in the office and just all guns blazing now, getting ready for Wednesday for the opening.
I, growing up, would have been familiar with it, and you assume it's something that just someone starts working on in December and makes it happen in January. But as you get older and wiser, you realise that's not the case. Now, I said that you're the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. So what does that mean, Mary?
I work for British Telecom, and we are the sponsors and organisers of the event, custodians as well, as we like to call ourselves.
Right.
And we do everything bar the judging. So we arrange everything and let schools know what's going on and everything else. So I work then with mostly the co-founder, actually, of the exhibition, Dr. Tony Scott.
Right.
And we work sort of hand in glove. It's part of a charitable trust that we set up back in early 2000. to protect the brand. And because of that, we've been able to expand and give licenses to a young scientist in Tanzania that's been going for about 7 years.
Right.
Young scientist Kenya, had its first event last year. And now we're going to a young scientist United Arab Emirates later in January.
Wow.
So that's what we do. It's the protection of that brand. And we run everything through that charitable trust.
All right. Now, for those that don't know what the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition is, will you talk me through it, please?
Basically, from probably when you remembered it, it was primarily a opportunity for second level students, so those in sort of 12 to 19 years of age,
yeah,
to get involved in science. Since we got involved 19 years ago, we sort of introduced technology category, but we've made it all about a festival of science. So as well as the main secondary school level, we've also introduced primary science back in 2003. So we run that under the same roof as such. So we have students now involved from 9 to 19. So across curriculum and all the rest, it's four categories. So we have chemical, physical, mathematical sciences, which is seen as the pure sciences. We have technology, we have ecological and biological, and we have social and behavioural. And within that, you can imagine there are hundreds of subject matter areas that people can explore and put projects together.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Tony Scott, and so he was the man that started this, or one of the people that started this. Where did it actually come from? Where did the idea come from originally, Mary?
Tony and his good friend, the late Father Tom Burke, both physicists, were in America back in 1963, 64.
Right.
And they came across this. I'd heard about this young guy, I think he was probably a second level student over there as well, or high school, who was taking part in a science fair.
Right.
So this guy was in the middle of the desert, I think it was in New Mexico, and he was launching a rocket, and that was his science fair project for that year. So the guys sort of went, okay, this could work in Ireland. And it has done. So we think we are the third longest running science fair in the world.
Right.
We're the longest running in Europe. So there's a lot of people have gone through. We reckon about 90,000 second level students across Ireland now have gone through. And you can imagine the amount of visitors we get as well. So hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people have come to visit those brilliant young minds every year.
Wow. And do you have to be a genius to take part?
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
There's just varying levels. We're not varying levels, like all the projects are really, really good. But it doesn't matter how academic or not you are.
Right.
Like we're seeing more students taking part in qualifying, because you have to put a project proposal in and then that's selective. We're seeing more students now that have various educational difficulties, and kids that may have autism or braxia or dyspraxia and different things like that. So it's open for all, and from an academic level, open to everybody. And the great thing about it is it's about an individual and a team competition.
Right.
So students can go by themselves or with one or two other people and form a team. So
like
it really is that support network that students can have as well.
All right. And down through the years, you would have put many people through your fingers, as you said. Are there any notable former students who would have competed, who have gone on to become entrepreneurs, leading business people, academics?
Yeah. No,
simple answer.
I had the pleasure of meeting one of our finalists. I think he was from one of our winners, actually, from the late 70s, about 6 weeks ago, when he was in Dublin. And he was over from the States, where he's based at Duke University, where he's the head of cancer research there.
Right.
He's absolutely brilliant. Like, there's so many notable academics. We have Patrick Collison, who is the co-founder of Stripe, which is, I think, valued over $12 billion now. Yeah, I know. And then we've others as well, like Shane Curran, our winner from 2 years ago, set up his own business. He is just 18. He's actually 19 later in the month.
Wow.
And he's in the midst of recruiting 20 software developers to work on his company. And other ones like Venue Health, who are two sisters for me, to set up a food supplement animal supplement company.
Okay.
And they are 17 and 18. So lots and lots of people out there with really some with very, very simple ideas, some with very complex ideas.
Now, this started back in 1965, and the world was a very different place back then. So I'm sure that there has been a metamorphosis happening, or there's been a turning point every so often for the types of projects that you would see at the exhibition. So what does 2019 hold for us?
Yeah, we seem to see a lot of themes coming out in the last probably 5 or 6 years. Definitely the students are becoming more socially aware. They're seeing what's going on in the world, and they're addressing very pertinent issues, as well as, of course, the pure science projects as well.
Right.
This year, the ones that we've seen are particularly around climate change and different areas there, microplastics, that the scourge that is, and all the rest, and ways of taking that out of water supplies and different things like that.
Okay.
Social media, the impact of social media, especially on young people.
Right.
And there's in Ireland as well, we've had an unfortunate issue with our cervical cancer screening
yes.
programs over the last year or so, and quite a few projects around that. So, and things about bees and birds and everything else. So really, really thought-provoking projects. And the students are actually amazing. They come up with ingenious. And as I said, sometimes the simplest idea is just jaw-dropping. You go, why did nobody think of that before?
Yeah. I've actually thought about that over the years, because you see the winners or you see exhibitors, and as they got older, I mean, when I was in the 80s, when I was in secondary school, you think, oh, jeepers, they're all geniuses. But as you get older, you think, well, why did somebody like older and more educated and academic not think of this? It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think one of the things as well is the students look at, like, we've had a lot of projects before where it's a very, very personal project. So maybe a parent or a grandparent might have MS or Parkinson's or something
okay,
like that.
Right.
And the students are looking particularly like that, or that they've been impacted by cancer in a family, or they've been impacted by suicide or different things like that. So very much it's a personal experience. And that's the sort of advice we give the students. So what we will do now, straight after the exhibition closes late this week, we'll start planning. Well, we're already thinking about 2020, of course, because it's our 20th year, so we want to do something special for that. But we will actually go out to schools in February and say, right, 2019's over, start thinking about 2020.
Brilliant.
And the type of things you should start looking at, look at your hobbies, look at what you're interested in. Because if somebody is passionate, and we all know this, if you're passionate about what you do, you're going to do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get more involved in what you do. So that's the advice we give the students.
All right. And just in terms of that, when a student may think about it, let's say in February, a student would think about it, what is his or her path from there to the RDS next year?
Well, the idea is the most important thing. So I've been asked, as you can imagine, over the years for advice from students and teachers and all the rest. And I sort of say, just look, sit there with a blank notebook or a blank piece of paper and just jot stuff down. Jot
right.
down questions that you need to ask and come up with your topic, and then see what's been done on that before and see if there's a different angle you could take with it. Because there has to be something different in a project for us to accept it.
Yeah.
Or a different way of looking at something. So that's the thing. So then what we do is we ask for a one-page proposal, and that is in September every year.
Okay.
So late September every year. And then we have a process that we call screening, and our judges, who all give their time freely, will look at the projects, and then they'll decide from there which 550 feature this week.
And are the judges that judge that aspect of it the same judges who judge the final?
Yes.
And
yes,
do we
that's
know
one thing that we ask? Yeah.
Do we know who they are and where they're drawn from?
We do. We've 81 this year.
81.
Yeah, 81 judges. Yeah.
How do they agree?
So, sorry.
How do they? Of course, there are just probably a certain number of judges for each category.
There's a certain it all depends. We sort of have an idea of how many they can do, because you've got to remember that every single project gets a minimum of 3 rounds of judging. So that's from 3 completely separate people.
Okay.
We bring them from a lot of academics, as you can imagine, a subject matter specialist, which is very, very important. So we have to, we'll recruit new people in, and we'll move people on and maybe invite them back a couple of years later, all depending on the trends and where we need the specialities.
Okay.
We have people from different government agencies, like the Housing Agency, like the Environmental Protection Agency, and then we've people that are in business or working in the likes of Enterprise Ireland or different areas like that. So it's across the board, all different types of skill sets.
All right. Okay, so interesting times ahead this week at the RDS in Dublin for the 2019 BT Young Scientists and Technology Exhibition. You have a website, I'm sure, where information is available?
Yes, it's www.btyoungscientist.com.
Will you be doing live updates on that on Facebook and various things during the exhibition?
We're on all the social platforms as well. So the hashtag sort of, or the tag for everything, is BTYSTE.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that. Well, listen, Mary, thanks a million. It's been lovely to talk to you and to kind of understand what goes on behind the scenes. We wish you well for 2019 and further afield. And thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
Thanks a million, Jeff.
That's Mary Cahalan. She is the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition, which kicks off at the RDS in Dublin on this Wednesday, the 9th of January.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
On the 1st of January, back in Ennis in County Clare, Brendan Grace took to the stage. I had been telling you that he and I had been in contact, and it's always a joy to sit with Brendan. So we agreed that I would go to the show, enjoy it, which I did immensely. And the following morning, we'd meet up for a cup of coffee and a scone, and we would do an extended interview. And it's always, as I said, a joy to talk to Brendan. This interview was conducted in the coffee shop at the West County Hotel in Ennis. There's a lot of noise behind it, so forgive that, but the dining room was just too busy, and that was the closest spot we could find where there's machinery working and all sorts of things. As you may know, Brendan has had some difficulties with his health over the years, and so his speech isn't as it used to be, so it was a very relaxed and laid-back interview, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed chatting with the wonderful Brendan Grace. I started by asking him about his trip to Ennis and indeed coming back to County Clare, and it's pretty much coming home for him.
I love it. I love County Clare. I've always loved it. I've always, even when I lived in Dublin, I used to come to Shannon Airport to fly to America at the time of the forced stopover. And when the flight used to stop there coming in, I used to get out in Shannon, have a few pints in Sheridan's Bar, and probably stay in a hotel down here and then go to Dublin the next day. It marks a good part of my life. Like the first country gig, when I was with the Bally Group, first time we ever played outside of the Pale, outside of Dublin, both gigs were in Clare. Yeah, we used to come down, I'm talking about 1969. We used to come down and there was a venue in Kilrush called the Galleon. And there was a man used to run it, the Lord of Mercy on him, T.A. Reedy. And T.A. was a very good friend of mine, ours. And we used to come down and we used to do the Friday night in his place. It was just outside Kilrush in a place called Cabba. We used to do the show there and we had a four-part harmony. We had a great following and we used to stay with him. He had a lovely big house. And him and his wife Dolores, you know, used to put us up. And of course we'd be fed and watered and we'd get a few quid for that. And then the next day, the gig was in Scariff, in the Merryman Tavern. And that was another great friend of ours, Aidan O'Byrne, the Lord of Mercy and poor old Aidan. You know, we used to go to the Merryman Tavern in Scariff and we had so much fun. And we had a following, and people used to come to see us. And we used to play, so it was Friday night in Kilrush, Saturday night in Scariff, and then we'd be up all night drinking in the Merryman. You know, the guards would be getting in over the gate, and we'd be all pretending we were asleep. And then on a Sunday, we'd always get mass in Scariff, with very bleary eyes. And then we'd head back for Dublin via Limerick. And we used to go in to the Grain Hills on the way home. But before we got there, we'd go to Dirty Nelly's. And Dirty Nelly's, for that reason, has always been my favourite pub, my favourite part of the world, in Ireland. And we used to go into Dirty Nelly's. And we used to get free drink because the Americans, you know, they'd see us in a banner group. And they come over, can you play Mother Macri? And we say, we can play anything you want. Whatever you want to pay us for, we'll do it. And Dirty Nelly's meant a lot to me. Because they used to do, and they still do, a sandwich, a toasted sandwich, that was cut in three parts rather than four. And we used to wait for the Americans to go out to the toilet or whatever, and then whatever sandwich they hadn't eaten, we would eat, right. You know. And they were great, great days. It was always in my mind, County Clare. And I came down then in more recent years. I moved to America, and then we came back, and we met a very, very good friend. And he said, why don't you come and live in Killaloe? And as it happened, we loved Killaloe. We loved, actually, I don't want to get them mixed up. We loved Goosers, which is in Ballina. And Goosers was owned those days by Roger, who also owned Dirty Nelly's. And we used to come to Goosers, and we moved in into it. We actually had a house built in, on the Ballina side, up near the hotel. And we moved in, and we've lived there ever since, when we're not in America, when we come home. So that's why Clare is, and the Limerick region, are so close to my heart.
It was in the show band that you initially started telling a few gags. Yeah. If rumour is correct, you were short one or two lads, things weren't going great, the audience were getting a bit antsy, and they sent you out to tell a few stories. That's how you got going in the comedy.
That's right. It was in Swords in County Dublin. And the top of the bill that night was Sean Dunphy, who since then, before he died, became a good friend. And Sean hadn't showed up. And we were the support act, the gingerman. So someone said, somebody will have to go out because this crowd are going to be... So I was pushed out on the stage and I told a couple of jokes. And it kept going until Dunphy arrived, you know, with a few drinks on board. And Sean sang, you know, If I Could Choose. His song was about Clare as well. Mm-hmm. Clare features very strongly in my life. That's how I actually got started in show business. Well, not in show business, but in comedy. Yeah.
And what made you decide, or how did you set about then creating? Because I think it was Butler made you famous comedy-wise, wasn't it?
It was. Butler was different. And a lot of my jokes were built around a schoolboy Butler in Dublin. And it was the nickname I had in school.
Was it?
Yeah. So it was myself that I was slagging. But I was making out that he was another person. And I got a spot, I think it was in 1972 or 73, on the Late Late Show. And I had just had a hit with Cushy Butterfield, my first record. And I went on the Late Late Show, and Gabo got me to do Butler with Cushy Butterfield. And I did the two, and people married the two together. And they associated this schoolboy character with the hit record and all. And so I actually, it was a hit start. I hit the jackpot from the word go, because I had just had a record, and I have to say I loved it.
Last night at the gig, you said that you were on the road 49 years. It's been a long time. And you were on the stage last night for over an hour and a half, about an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do.
No, but it comes natural when, you know, once you get started. It'd be like jumping into the harbour in Scariff and swimming in December. Once you get in, you're fine. And once I get on stage, I'm fine. But Clare had a lot to do. I remember when I first met Eileen, she wasn't yet 21. And I was doing a gig here in the West County. It had only been built. Mr. Lynch owned it then. And I remember I was doing a gig in the lounge here. And in the ballroom was Tommy Drennan, who has since become a dear friend. So when we were finished, Eileen, I said to Eileen, come on, we go in and we'll see the show band. So we went in and we saw Tommy Dren. And Tommy, you know, I had a hit record. So it was beginning to get known. And Tommy, after the show was over, I told him it was my 21st birthday. And Tommy, this is at about 2 in the morning, he got someone to get a cake and they gave me my 21st birthday party in the ballroom, which as far as I can remember was the swimming pool at one stage.
Yes.
And they covered it in.
Yes.
So Tommy Drennan, and Tommy, you know, people with Tommy, when I think of it in those days, in the Monarchs, Dennis Allen was in the band. And guess who else? Sean O'Dowd. They were all in the band with Tommy. And he gave me my 21st, and Eileen was so emotive about the fact that this famous show band, the guys, you know, gave me the recognition of. It was great, though. It was a great life then. And thank God now, 49 years later, it's actually more, but I only admit to 49 years. 49 years later, it's still going well.
You talk about Eileen in your show, and you talk about Eileen a lot, and we saw a documentary on television about 2 or 3 months ago. We heard you being interviewed on national radio with Miriam O'Callaghan. Both wonderful interviews and a documentary, absolutely yes. Fabulous. You raised 4 children.
Yes.
So it must have been tough for both you and Eileen, because you were on the road quite a lot, travelling the length and breadth of the country. Yes. And she was at home minding 4 babies. So, but you've still managed to make it work. You said last night you're 46 years married this year.
Yeah. Eileen was, she was a multi-purpose lady. She was the daddy and the mummy. I was the breadwinner. I was on the road. I didn't play golf, because if I had played golf in those days, I never would have seen the children. So I used to come back from the gigs. I would probably see the kids going to school. But it was a long career, but it was a lovely life. You know, we had a great time. I joke about her name.
Yeah.
I keep calling her Kathleen, you know. And because Brendan Shine's wife is Kathleen. A lot of people say, people have actually said, no, is that not Brendan Shine's wife? And I pretend, I say, ah, yeah, that's right, I forget. But it worked out for us. And I have to say that here now, you know, all those years later, it's still going. And I wouldn't mind, but things, I consider myself more popular now than I was then.
You put 500 people, let's say, maybe 600 people into the hall last night.
Yeah.
And the age group went from everything from senior citizens to children. How do you do that?
Well, I don't know. It's probably the type of material that I use. I've always made it a point of not using, I won't say risque. I do, all my material is risque, but I've never done vulgar material. And I never actually resorted to the swear words. I pretend to say them and stop. And that in itself is, it takes a while to be able to do it. You've got to be able to do it. It's like somebody who plays the piano very badly. They have to be a really good piano player to play it badly. And I kept it that way. And all through my life, people say that, you know, it's great, we can bring the kids to see it, or we can bring granny to see it, and there's no curse or anything like that. That's just the way I was. That's the way my mother was, Lorna Mercer. And, my mother was great at telling a joke of any type. But with respect to her, more so even than my dad, I didn't curse. And I'm still at it. You want to hear me, though? When I'm hammering in a nail and I hit me thumb with the hammer, then I can curse and I can say flip.
With the best of them, I'm sure. Is Brendan Grace ever off duty? Because there isn't anybody in Ireland, I'm sure, that doesn't recognise Brendan Grace. And I know you do a bit of travelling, we'll talk about that in a minute, but are you always on? When you meet people, you have to be the Brendan Grace they believe they know. But as well as that, when you're sitting on your sofa at home or you're relaxing on a plane, or you're maybe on the golf course or whatever it is you might be doing, are you looking for material?
I don't write material, but I think of material and I remember it. And my rehearsal of material is at the live show. And I've always said to people that every single show I've done, I mean, I don't know how many individual shows I've done in my career, but every single show I do is a rehearsal for the next one. And as a result, I seem to hone it in like a, you know, like a good carpenter. I hone it in to do it right, you know. And I have to say that everyday situations are funny. Jokes are funny. And I reckon that if something was funny for Laurel and Hardy 100 years ago, there's no reason in the world why it can't be funny today, if you tell it the right way.
You talked about travelling to Russia and to Japan. Now, I had no idea at the time, listening to you and watching you on stage, whether you were telling the truth or telling or just building up a gag. So have you been there? And have you... And go on, tell me what.
I've never been there. The nearest I was to Russia was Shannon Airport, because Shannon was the hub for Aeroflot.
Yeah.
And no, I've never been to Russia, I've never been to Japan, but they go well in the show.
Yeah.
But my father, Lord of Medicine, he always said, never let a lie get in the way of a good story. And that's the way I've been.
Ah, that's fantastic. When you spoke to Miriam, mm-hmm. you talked a lot about your health.
Yeah.
And the documentary, a lot about your health and about your wife's attitude to what had happened over the years. Talk to me about your health. How are you?
Great. You get a different answer now from Eileen. But I've been a diabetic for 25 years. And there's good diabetics and there's bad diabetics. And I've been a very unruly diabetic. I used to joke about, you know, the fact that I only ate chocolate in the dark, so you couldn't see it. That provided me with complications. And then I had a leg problem and I had two toes removed. Luckily, that's all I had. And that turned into a problem with the bone in my foot. And I found that the leg became a problem, and I have to say, all the aspects of my health have been good, but I've been a bad pupil. And then, in recent times, apart from good medication and things like that, over the years, I met up with Michael O'Doherty, another Clare man. See, Clare keeps coming back into my life, and Michael O'Doherty and his bioenergy. I had read the story about Michael Flatley, and he was zonked out. Michael came and worked bioenergy on him, and it brought him back to life. And I figured, you know, I'm going to try this bioenergy. And I have to say that my health situation since then has been optimal because of it, yeah. I tried to stay ahead of the health. You know, I've a more stricter eating regime than I used to. And a drinking regime, because I mean, you know, over the years I used to drink a good bit, you know, like everybody else did. I wasn't an alcoholic ever, but I used to, you know, I'd go out and drink 6 to 8 pints, and it was in an early day too when I used to smoke a cigarette, and that played havoc on my later years. And luckily enough, I got to it before it got to me. So here I am, Ger. How do I look?
You look absolutely fine. What do you want to do from here on in?
Pretty well what I'm doing. So I think if I can keep going and if I can keep making people happy, it's great, because I joke about meeting people on stage and all that, but I love it. And I have to say that meeting people and being recognised by people, which happens all the time, is a joy. It never bothers me in the slightest. And when I go to America, where I live, which is my home, Florida, America, it's a very pleasant climate. There's a few Irish people who live in, who we hang around with. But over there, I'm anonymous. That's my freedom, you see.
1975, you had a hit with I Have a Brand New Combine Harvester.
Yeah.
And then you talked about it, the Wurzels picked it up the following year. Did you write that?
Yeah.
Did you?
The Combine Harvester I wrote, and I recorded it, and it was number one. It went to number one here. And it was a number one for quite a while. And it was a fun record. And then one day, a fella came to me and he said, do you know, there's an English group singing that song. And it turned out to be a group called the Wurzels. And their record producer had heard me singing it here in Ireland, a fella called Bob Barrett. And he brought it back to them. And I said, good luck to them, they may as well have a hit. They had a number one over there. But they never even... I never ever got a card from them to say thank you. Combine Harvester was the play on words. A song called Brand New Pair of Roller Skates. And the person who wrote and recorded that had a single name called Melanie. And as a result of that, I called one of my two daughters Melanie.
Yeah.
So I have a daughter who's called after a piece of farm machinery.
Will you do more singing? Will you do more recording? Have you plans?
I didn't do much in the show, but I've always enjoyed singing. And I recorded a song in 1982 called The Dutchman. The Dutchman again was a hit, a radio hit, because everybody loved the chorus. Let us go to the banks of the ocean. And it came and went, and it was among my souvenirs, The Dutchman. And one night I was at a party in the Abbey Glen Hotel in Connemara, and we get into a session. Donald Lunny, Frankie Gavin, Sharon Shannon, Eleanor Shandy, and a lot more. And we sat around singing. And I sang The Dutchman unaccompanied. And they all knew it and they sang with me. And Eleanor said to me, she was kind of wiping the tears from her eyes. And she says, you know, that song strikes a chord in me, she said, because my mother passed away recently and she had Alzheimer's. And I said, that's terrible. And I'm trying to think, what's the connection? And I said, did she like that song? Well, she said, it's about Alzheimer's. And I had to think, and this is 35 years after I recorded it. And she said, listen to the words. And I listened to the words. And every single word, every single verse, every sentence in the song refers to dementia and Alzheimer's, that dreadful illness. And it's a song about a lady called Margaret who was devoted to her ailing husband. Let us go to the banks of the ocean. And the song starts and finishes and runs right through the moments of dementia for him. And I got emotional. And then I said to myself, they're trying to raise awareness in Ireland lately to Alzheimer's. So I had known that Nora Owen, the former Minister for Justice, I'd known Nora for a long time. And I knew that her beloved husband, Brian, you know, had Alzheimer's. And I went to her and I says, I'd like to dedicate a song to the Alzheimer's Society. You're connected in there, she said. If you could do it, I will sing the song, I'll re-release it, and I'll give them the whole mechanicals of the song. I don't want to have anything to do with it. If it raises awareness and if it raises money. And Nora said to me, she says, you know, they have a choir in there, in the Alzheimer's dementia. And the choir is called the Forget-Me-Nots. Yeah. And it's a tongue-in-cheek name. And she said the reason they have it is because song and music is a trigger for people with Alzheimer's, and it brings them their memory back. And I recorded the song. Donal Lunny came in and recorded it with me. He did the recording. And the song was the 35-year-old version. It wasn't re-recorded with the choir. The two together, it was like as if they grew on together because of perfect timing. And the song has been out for them. And it's on download. And they've raised money with it. And they've certainly raised awareness. And I am doing a show in the National Concert Hall in 2 weeks' time. And the Forget-Me-Nots Choir are coming on stage to do it. So it's a happy story at the end of the day.
Do you like giving something back?
I think giving something back is very important. Because my first show, I mean, the show that I was pushed out on stage to do comedy was a charity show. And I've done, as all of the entertainers in Ireland have done, many, many fundraisers, benefits. And yes, I certainly do believe that it's very important to give back.
Brendan, thank you for spending time this morning talking to me about various aspects of your life, and I wish you well. Wish you Happy New Year, you, Eileen, and the children. And I hope 2019 will be a great year for you, and look forward to seeing you back in County Clare in 2020. But before I let you go, you had never been to Russia, you had never been to Japan.
No.
What about, will you come to Spain sometime?
Spain I've been to, all right, but because I live in America, and because I always went to Florida over the years, even before I moved to Florida, we used to go there for holidays. And that was because Aer Lingus flew to Boston and New York and other places. And it was great. I was at home going there. But are you inviting me to Spain?
Why not?
Let's talk about it.
Brendan Grace, thank you very much.
Olé. That's the only word I have. They wouldn't understand my comedy.
There's enough Irish there to understand it.
We're going to do a concert. Let's do it. Thank you very much, Chair.
And here's the Dutchman.
The Dutchman's not the kind of man to keep his thumb jammed in the dam that holds his dreams in. But that's a secret only Margaret knows. When Amsterdam's golden in the morning, Margaret brings him breakfast. She believes him. He thinks the tulips bloom beneath the snow. He's mad as he can be, but Margaret only sees that sometimes. She often sees her unborn children in his eyes. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me. The Dutchman still wears wooden shoes, his cap and coat are patched with the love that Margaret sewed in. Sometimes he thinks he's still in Rotterdam. He watches tugboats down canals and calls out to them when he thinks he knows the captain. Then Margaret comes to take him home again, through unforgiving streets that trip him, though she holds his arm. Sometimes he thinks that he's alone and he calls her name. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me. Thank you. enter in. She wraps his muffler tight as they sit in the kitchen. Some tea with whiskey keeps away the dew. He sees her for a moment, calls her name. She makes his bed up, singing some old love song, a song she learned when it was very new. She sings a line or two, they hum together in the night. The Dutchman falls asleep and Margaret blows the candle out. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me.
Beautiful song and the wonderful sentiments behind it, as discussed by Brendan Grace and myself when we sat together on the morning of the 2nd of January when I was back in Ireland. And thank you to Brendan for taking time out to sit with me and chat. Let's do a quick break.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
I'm only going to get a chance to put a small bit of this song in, but I wanted to play something from the Chieftains before I went. Can I say thank you very much for listening? Thank you to my guests today, Mary Cahalan and the wonderful Brendan Grace. Thank you for listening. Thank you as well to our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent or consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra. And I'm back with you again next week on the programme. Look forward to your company then. In the meantime, look after yourselves and each other. And we leave you with the Chieftains. This is O'Sullivan's March. Until next week, from me, Ger Sweeney, bye bye now.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with EmeraldConnection.net.